Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to this month's Banging Book Club podcast. I am here with lovely friends Hannah Witten and Lena Norms.
And this is Lucy Moon.
Lucy Moon. Hello.
We're back. Sorry this is late.
We just had a big talk about secrets that you guys can't know yet, but you will hear in the next podcast.
Announcement. Not yet. Next time.
Woo! So,
love secrets.
So this month we read Perv by Jessie Baring.
Bring,
bring,
bring, bring, bring,
bring, bring. It's Jesse. What's he?
Amazing. And we all read it on a different format. So Hannah used.
I Kindled it. I read it on my phone sometimes.
That just sounds like you burnt it. Yeah. Like, kindling, mate.
Yeah, I used the Kindle app on my phone / iPad.
Kindle is like to burn the books.
Yeah. Fucked up, right? Yeah, that's why it's called a Kindle.
Oh.
Nazis.
I don't like it anymore.
No, that makes me feel weird in my tummy.
Anyway, I just thought it was interesting because I read it on a Kindle, Lena read the physical book, and Lucy audiobooked.
And this was my first ever audiobook, and I did it because I couldn't get hold of the book before I went on holiday. So I had to. There was no choice in the matter.
You could have Kindled.
How did you find the audiobook?
Well, bear in mind, it's the author is reading it. I found it hard to take in a lot of it, which sounds really weird. Also,
it's very fact-based, so it's harder to...
Yeah, I want to listen to music when I listen to stuff. Like, it didn't quite go in as well, I don't think. But also, you hear his intonation, you hear how he kind of says stuff.
Do you like him? Like, from being able to hear his voice, do you like him as a person?
That's a really good question. I don't agree with everything he thinks, and I think it definitely what he thinks comes across very well through the way he verbalizes it.
Yeah.
Which is other non-fiction books we've read, we're still not very sure as to what the author thinks.
Yeah.
And we're just like, that was just a pile of facts you threw at me. So what I liked about this is that I was like, okay, it's clear.
Yeah, it feels very clear.
It's almost like a manifesto of his.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It feels. The other thing I feel like is worthy to point out, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first Banging Book Club book by a male that we've read.
Ooh,
welcome.
By a man.
Men.
You are now included in the conversation.
We let you in halfway through, which is about when you let us in to like vote and everything else. So, like, yeah.
Three quarters of
it. Yeah, I was like, yes.
Have we read any like Bang. Black, yeah, black Asian
We're
minority
We're going to be reading Jackie Kay, Trumpet.
We'll try and get
Googled
more.
Pictures of everybody that we've so we don't
Me,
know.
Neither.
But
yeah.
We should look.
We really should. And we picked Trumpet because we knew, on top of everything else, that it was
gonna be different.
Yeah.
But that's for August.
Yes.
So
let's focus
Hold
on
your horses.
July, June.
This is
June.
June's book, technically. Oh yeah, housekeeping. We love a good bit of housekeeping. Thanks to Lena, we're now on
housekeeping.
And we're now on iTunes.
But SoundCloud, who didn't let us keep uploading, but yay!
Yeah, yeah. We're now on iTunes. So
give us a rating.
Give
us
a review. Yeah,
listen.
The first people to give us reviews will give shout outs in the next podcast. So go and review us.
Yeah,
that's
well
a good idea.
Yeah,
we'll shout out your names and.
And thank
only
you.
If it's a good review, though.
Yeah.
Don't feel like this is tedious.
Why are we listening to women?
Sorry. To be fair, I have been listening to a lot of podcasts in the top 10 on iTunes, and they've been quite dull.
So oh,
I think
let's
we're in with a chance.
Let's get into the
Needs
top 10.
More sex and more laughs. That's my feedback
okay.
to iTunes.
And
top
more
10.
Gin.
Yeah. More gin required.
More gin, more sex, more laughs. We need to put that as our like slogan.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
And then the other bit of housekeeping is our trigger warning. For this podcast and the book.
Yeah, if you haven't read the book,
Do you just consider? We talk about rape and paedophilia a lot,
and also throwing up.
Oh yeah,
lots of body functions. Body if you're stuff. Very sensitive about that.
Also, if you haven't read the book, there's a video on Lucy's channel that's kind of like a summary. Woo. And this podcast is going to be like going in detail about all of it.
Gloves on.
And yeah, if you want, ready.
And if you want to make a video response, use the hashtag Banging Book Club when you tweet it, and Hannah will put it in the playlist.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. Okay, so first impressions, ladies, I guess. I mean, we've just finished it, so like,
yeah,
fresh. Or is it
factual? Again, I have a similar reaction to it to as I did to Vagina, in that it brought up loads of discussions that hadn't occurred to me, and I, as the person who has a somewhat fetish for the physical book, I was scribbling the whole way through it and having my own ideas in the margins because I was like, this is interesting, I never thought about it like this before. And again, I like Lucy, I didn't agree with everything, but I had fun reading it.
Yeah.
Even though I wouldn't say it's like the funnest book ever.
I don't think I had fun reading it.
I agree.
I found it difficult. There was just a lot of words and it was slow.
A discussion of how we feel.
Let's talk about gross and disgust in a bit. But yeah, I actually didn't have a good time reading it. But a lot of the things that was covered in the book is stuff that I've already like researched and read up on.
Mm.
And so there were some things in it that were new to me. And there were some things that I agreed with, some things that I disagreed with, but I feel like the main message of the book and the main content of it, I was like, yeah, I know.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I...
Yeah.
See, I haven't formally studied sex.
Yeah.
So I...
Also, did anyone notice that there has been one particular sexual experiment / research study that's been done that has now appeared in three of the books that we've read?
The rats one?
No, it's the one where people they
I remember it's the one it
where
up.
Yeah, it's the one where how do I can never like do, right. It's the one where they got different men and women to like gauge how sexually aroused they were by looking at different things, but then they also measured their sexual arousal.
Was that the same experiment every time? I was like, why do people keep doing this experiment?
I'm pretty sure it's the same experiment.
Yeah.
But basically saying that, like, I think the way that Jesse Baring put it is that a man's erection is basically like looking into his soul of sexual desire. Like, if he's erect, he's attracted to it. Whereas for women, like, we could be like wet. But that doesn't mean that that's our, like, sexual orientation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also the whole thing about women being a little bit bisexual.
Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, your first impressions, Lucy, and then...
Oh, yeah.
We've got so much to talk about.
I know. My first impressions, as someone that doesn't know much about, like, sexology, the study of sex, I guess, I still didn't find it that interesting. I think it's because I've now read three factual books about sex, and
we've read
a bit
so
bored.
Many fact books.
We need.
I'm so sorry. Our next book is also a fact book.
It was actually,
but it's history,
and it's got pictures.
It's got pictures.
Oh, I like pictures. And then we get onto the fiction.
Back to fiction.
And also, the thing about audiobooks was like it felt like a chore having to read it. I think I would have enjoyed it so much more had it been a physical book. Mm. And I've never thought I'd find that much of a difference.
Yeah.
But that act of reading.
Did you learn stuff?
Yes, I did, and I have opinions, which is good, but it felt like a chore to try and get through it, because I was doing it on times where I could be listening to music, which is, like, my priority.
I felt like it was a chore just because I only started reading it, like, a day or two ago, and I was like, I've got a deadline!
Yeah, because normally I don't feel like these books are such a chore, especially the fiction ones.
I think, as well, I don't know, I was reading the physical one, so I was always looking at the cover, and the cover makes me feel like it's going to be funner than it is.
Yeah.
It's a comedy cover.
It's going to be, more lighthearted, and the back is like, the young woman who's fall madly in love with the Eiffel Tower, ha ha ha, and, like, lists all these hilarious... sexual deviances. But actually we only got about a page about the woman who's in love with the Eiffel Tower, which is frankly disappointing.
Even just a paragraph.
The book looks cheekier than it is.
Yes, cheeky's the word.
Cheeky.
Yeah. It's not cheeky at all.
Or you dirty perv.
So great marketing. Yeah. On behalf of Corgi. But
it does have a strong conclusion though, and that's something that kind of runs as a thread throughout the book. I was gonna say novel.
Shall we start with the discussion of, I guess, the main point, the message then?
Yeah,
which let's see if we all
got the same conclusion. What I think his main point is that whatever people's sexual desires are, their orientation, their fetishes, or whatever, that's absolutely fine as long as no one is getting harmed.
Yeah.
And it's and you're born that way. Like, it's not a choice kind of thing.
He wants us to remove morality from the discussion of sexual persuasions. How, unless it's harming... No, yeah, yeah. But harming people is wrong. And if it plays into harming people without consent...
Yeah.
Then that is where you draw the line.
Whereas if you think it's just wrong because it's wrong, then he's like, he's them. Like, that's not a valid argument.
Or wrong because it creeps you out.
Moral dumbfounding, where you can't explain why you find something immoral, you just do.
Yeah.
Which plays into the idea of disgust, because disgust is like a sensory experience. So when the Nazis were trying to make people repulsed by Jewish people, they were like, they smell weird. But they do. They're saying like sensory disgusting.
Oh, that's interesting.
But the whole thing about morals is so interesting to me, because I remember having conversations with like friends at uni that were studying philosophy, and they would tell me about, basically, they would ask me like why I had certain morals if I wasn't Christian, because they're like, where do your morals come from? Like, why do you even have morals and stuff? And I'd be like, I don't know. Stop making me think about it.
And did you live with a house of Christians?
Yeah. And so
confusing times.
I chose to have this discussion with someone the other day as well.
And this book made me try and think about my morals and like really like question them.
Yeah.
Because this book, basically the message of what it's saying is that like, if you are a paedophile, like if you're attracted to young, like children, if you're attracted to children, then like you can't help that. And that's a sexual orientation. But obviously like acting upon it would then be bringing harm to a child, so that's wrong.
But
then there's also the incest thing. He's basically saying that incest between two consenting adults is fine.
Necessarily.
Not which, fine, but it's like you would have to put forward a really strong argument to why you think it's morally wrong. If no child is being conceived, especially if it's like homosexual incest.
That's the problem.
There's just a lot of things to think about, and you're just like, my gut is being like, no, that's horrible, it's weird, it's wrong, it's gross, I'm repulsed by that whole thing. But then, like, when you just go through all of the arguments for it, like, at the end of the book, he says something about, like, trying to balance between our innate judgments and our critical thinking skills.
Because our innate judgments come from a logical place, in that society needed to be disgusted by incest, because they had to produce healthy human beings to carry on. But seeing as it doesn't look like we're really like prioritizing making any more humans, would not recommend ice caps rapidly disappearing. That's not a priority, so should we still be disgusted by incest if it's not?
I don't know, man. I still am.
I don't know.
Like, I still personally very much am. But
and he's definitely taking it from the standpoint of today. He said he quotes Charles Dickens at the end and is like, best of times, worst of times.
Yeah. I think that's such a cheap...
Why did he throw that in there?
Anywhere, people need to stop quoting that line. Yeah. It made sense in this context, but I was like, we need to stop with that line.
Yeah. Great point made, okay, done.
It's like, it's the beginning of every like rom-com. Yeah.
Can I bring... We're on the like pretty much on the subject, but can I turn it towards what Jesse says about bestiality, because that was the one point where I got really weirded out and I was like, no, I do not agree with you at all.
How do we know if the animal's being harmed or not?
Yeah, because he was saying,
how do we know if the
animal's animal
giving consent?
Is enjoying it, it is giving consent and thus okay, which I totally disagree with.
The other thing is though, like, how do you know if an animal's enjoying it? Because he even has a whole section on tickling.
Yeah.
And like, just watching someone getting tickled, it could be hard to tell just from their physical reaction if they're enjoying it or if they're, like, in so much pain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like,
I realised as well that I didn't have enough of a reaction in the last books where we read stuff about experiments on animals. And then I read them again here and I was like, this keeps coming up and I think it's not okay.
Yeah.
I really don't think.
Yeah.
And also the thing about getting sheep's, like,
swapping the sheeps and the goats around. Yeah,
I mean, it's interesting. I learned something from it, but I don't think it's morally okay. I think that's tampering with lives that aren't ours. And I think,
there's a lot
of animal cruelty that clearly, like,
now I've gone cruelty free, I've noticed a lot more. Like, I feel weird about animal experiments that aren't for medicine. Or, like, I don't know.
But then it's
feeling
like,
weirder about
but
it.
But are these... Is this not for medicine? Or
it's
is
like
it
for mental health medicine.
But then...
Yeah. I don't know.
Sexual health medicine. It reproductive seems like, medicine. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, What's it for?
Where's the line?
When I find its purpose, I'll feel happier.
It's like Tower of Babel. We're like trying to be God. I'm trying to know. And I don't know if it's... don't know if it's okay.
Yeah. God, there are going to be scientists listening to this like, why? Why do we let all the humanities students read the book?
Can we talk about disgust?
It scares me that one day I might be married to somebody and they get really viscerally ill. And then I won't be as sexually attracted to them because
you're like
they've disgusted
them. But then what happens if your sexual partner is there with you whilst you're like giving birth to the baby?
Yeah, I've always thought this was weird. I think we need to get rid of disgust because, yeah. And also, the babies are disgusting. You have to look after babies for like 4 years of their life and they're just being disgusting.
For me, it's when they come out of you.
You're not sexually attracted to them.
When they come out of you and they're covered in blood and stuff and placenta bits.
You don't have to be... it's not saying that disgust stops you from loving something. It says it stops you from being sexually attracted to it.
So yeah, men watching us give birth is weird to me.
But then...
so much blood and
shit. Sexual
attraction
and love aren't always like... at odds.
Yeah,
and especially, what's the word for people who are only sexually attracted to people they love?
Demisexual? Kind of demisexual. You have to have an emotional connection before you feel sexual attraction.
And also, you can just say to your partner, like, oh, can you just go to the head of the bed? Like, I'd rather you weren't seeing what's going on down there. Just hold my hand and stroke my head.
Yeah.
Okay, I've come up with a solution, guys.
Yeah,
but then I had to get over my initial disgust of moon cups and my own body to use moon cups, and now it's a really positive experience for me.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Disgust isn't always rational.
Yeah. One of the things that I find really interesting about sexual arousal and disgust and how, like, the two are so, like, weirdly linked, and reading this book reminded me of something that I read in Essays in Love by Alain de Botton, whatever his name is. But in this book, which is kind of like a fiction philosophical book, I guess, he talks about, like, when two people like each other, when you're into someone, you get turned on and sexually aroused by the idea of doing certain things with them. But if you don't fancy the person, you're disgusted by doing exactly the same things.
They're the things that...
like,
it's
think,
the
association,
so
that's why it's
not
romantic.
Reaction.
Exactly. Like, think of someone that you fancy and think about, like, sucking their dick. Great. Think about someone you don't fancy at all. Think about sucking their dick.
Yeah.
Like, and it's exactly the same act, and you have, like, two completely opposing, like, reactions to it. Do you know?
But that's surely that's with most. No. Sex is definitely more...
so
the intimacy.
The act isn't arousing
genitals.
In itself. It's who you're doing it with. Even if you're not, like, emotionally... like, you don't have to be in love with them. You seem to be physically attracted to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The sexual arousal has to be that. I don't know.
So... can I bring up what's troubling me most about this? This is more like a counselling session as well.
Okay.
So I think of myself as quite liberal, but on purpose. I try and like be liberal about things unless I have a reason not to be for some reason. So when I think about other people's fetishes, especially like to do with violence and sadomasochism and stuff, I try and be as liberal as possible. And I'm like, that's cool. If you're into it, cool. But the question that I've written down here is, can we both campaign for consent and support people whose fetish involves no consent? So even if you're consenting to be harmed by somebody else, the fetish and the idea of them being in pain turns you on.
There's no consent there. Do you mean more like consenting to act out rape fantasies?
Yeah. Because that you're still fetishizing the idea of having power and taking away somebody's consent, even if you have subliminally consent. I don't know.
I'm similar to you in that I have trouble figuring that out, but like someone I know has like talked me through like their experience of acting out a rape scene fantasy with a partner that was like fully consensual kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it is like you're sitting on it and you're just like, oh, I feel like so uncomfortable with this, but then I don't know, it's really true. I'm like, why is that being fetishized in the first place? Like,
yeah,
I wish like non-consent, I just wish non-consensual sex, i.e. rape, wasn't
sexy.
Even a fantasy. Like, I just,
what led to that?
Yeah, like, that's just troubling.
Are you
for me.
Okay,
but then the thing is, in BDSM relationships where there's like either there's pain involved or there's like role playing involved, from what I know about the BDSM community, is that they're so good at consent and they're
so
good
of
communication. And
they have safe words, like stuff like that.
Exactly.
It's no 50 Shades.
But I just don't think I'd ever be up for trying it. Like, there's loads of other, like, sexual fetish stuff. Yeah. That I'm like, sure. That, I don't even want to be up for trying it. Because I just... It's still, I think...
But that's fine. If it doesn't turn you on, then...
Where do you draw the line with that? Do you mean, like, anything remotely, like, violent? Or do you mean, like, anything
to do with... I just think that if... I personally wouldn't want to be in a relationship where somebody was even turned on by the idea of me not consenting.
Yeah, I think that would be...
For me. And I don't want to, like, shame anybody sexually. But it's interesting as well. So it ties into the paedophilia thing, where he questions, quite interestingly, whether we should make simulated child porn available so that people who have
puts forward a really good argument orientated for it as well.
To children won't... Because apparently the argument is that when sexually violent porn is more available in certain communities, the rate of actual sexual assault goes completely down.
And that's apparently also true of paedophiles that watch child porn are less likely to actually harm a child or touch a child.
According to the research that we have available to us.
But then, so in the paedophilia chapter, like...
That was the most interesting one for
me. In the paedophilia chapter, he was, like, saying some stuff, and I kept on thinking, but what about this? What about this? And then literally in the next paragraph, he would address that thing.
Yeah, like, thank you.
He was very good at that throughout the whole book, I think. Yeah. Anytime I had, like, a qualm, whenever I've ever used that word, he'd usually address it very soon afterwards.
Yeah. I thought that was... It felt very satisfying as a reader, that happening.
That's why I was enjoying it.
I get he must have had, because for a book like this, followed my brain so pattern. Many proofreads. A lot of it must have been, but what about this, someone's saying, and then he's like, okay, I need to go through that again.
I found the paedophilia chapter really interesting just from the perspective of someone who, like, I want to talk about that online, like, and it's something that I've researched and read up on, and one of the researchers that he mentions in the book is someone that I've emailed to be like, hey, have you got any research that's, like, for layman people instead of, like, scientists, because I can't read that. And so that was interesting to me because I was trying to read it and be like, okay, how is he phrasing this? Because if I ever, like, make a video on it or something, it's all about your tone and your phrasing and, like, and I was just, I guess I was just curious that way. Because, like, all of the stuff that you put forward about paedophilia, I kind of, like, already knew. But no one else does. Exactly. Yeah. Like, so many people don't. And that's, to me, it's, like... so interesting.
And it's good because I would never have picked up a book about paedophilia.
Yeah.
But I would pick up a funny book with a picture of a sheep on the front that's like, woman who falls in love with the Eiffel Tower. Like, that's apparently.
And then it's like, bam, paedophilia is a sexual orientation. And you're like, oh my God. Like,
what? But yeah, I think it's interesting as well because he talks about paedophiles more likely to be short.
Really?
Yeah. So this is, like, the research.
Wait,
that...
bear in mind, I got, like, I kept having to jump this bit of the chapters.
Yeah, no, just so this is part chapters. Of James Cantor's research, who's the Canadian guy. Paedophiles are more likely to be short, left-handed, and have a lower IQ.
Yes.
Really?
That's the part that I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. And so the thing that... So James Cantor, this research, he did loads of MRI scans on known paedophiles. And so the one thing that they figured out about their brain is that the white matter in their brain is different from a normal... I'm doing inverted commas, normal brain. And white matter isn't the parts of your brain, it's the parts that connects the bits of your brain. So there's basically, like, the wiring is wrong. So the way that Jesse describes it in the book is, like, when a paedophile sees a child, it's not the... like, maternal or parental, like, instinct that kicks in. It's a sexual instinct that kicks in instead. So it's just, like, just the messaging is getting messed up somewhere
that's
in the brain.
That's interesting. That's so interesting. Like, you can... Why did I miss this part of the chapter?
Yeah. That's fine. I think there was a part as well that said that it's really genuinely... Because, you know, it's a common conception that women aren't usually paedophiles. And he kind of confirms that in this.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, no, they're really not. But I didn't really get an answer as to why. Maybe we don't know.
This is a thing that I wanted to bring up. Moving on from paedophilia, maybe. the one thing that I found really interesting was the number that he kept on throwing around being like, to every 99 male paraphilias that there are. There's one female paraphilia.
Question, what's a paraphilia again?
Someone with like a unique fetish or different.
Yeah. I thought it was about sensory. Okay.
I think that's the name, the word. Paraphilia.
He used it a lot in one chapter.
That's the umbrella term for like a sexual deviant is for paraphiliac, okay. I think.
Yeah.
Please correct me if I'm wrong. We could Google that. but we're not going to.
Nah.
But yeah, 99 male want to one female. Except in like sadomasochist relationships, it's like 20 to 1. Mm. So women are more likely to have that kind of fetish than like any of the other things. Oh, and also the objects one. So being attracted to like inanimate objects. Like that's more 50-50, I think he said.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, but like you said, he never explained why. Why are men more predisposed to having fetishes?
I thought it was kind of...
Or being sexual deviants.
In the same line of why men find it hard, like how women can be turned on by a lot of things, whereas men are very, very specific. Mm. I thought it was on those lines of like once they all had an experience in their past.
Oh God, it was so Freudian.
Yeah.
Did you get that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that bit
So maybe subliminally. Because we're turned on by a lot of things. I keep reading these things. Maybe subliminally comes into our minds and then we're like, nah.
Because like, yeah.
I keep reading these things fluid. And I'm like, maybe Freud was right.
You know? But then when you hear the audiobook part of that, of the book,
yeah,
Jesse makes it quite clear that he's like, this is a Freudian concept.
But he doesn't offer an alternative.
He says these are the strongest that we've got,
and they're Freudian. And I'm like, how have we gotten like almost 100 years since Freud, and no one's come up with a better alternative to his theories about it all happening in childhood?
This is the only thing I've ever seen. The only thing I've ever read that puts some legitimacy in Freud's theories about like the ego and stuff.
Yeah, or about like what like you're sexually attracted to basically being determined by your experiences as a child.
Seeing an amputee leg under a table.
I used to read loads of Lacan, but like
normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
That's who I was researching, and he talks about how our ego is created once we realise that, like, mirrors are a huge part of how we create an ego, and I think he talks about that as well. And there's also a woman called Mylene Klein who nobody talks about because she's a woman. I think, but I don't know what she says, so I can't elaborate. Okay. But that's the problem. I don't know. I don't really know, but I feel like there must be, and maybe he just, I don't know.
The other thing about, yeah, so 99 to 1, no idea why, and that's frustrating. That was one of my biggest unanswered questions from this book.
Can I put forward a theory?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That for women, because they're the ones physically birthing the children, it's less confusing for them when they're like, oh, I love this child. It's not as confusing. Because we physically birth them, we know that that's our child. And we're even.
No, but I'm not just talking about paedophilia. I'm talking about like the whole spectrum of all of the different deviances.
I think it's to do with the fact we're just more
emotionally intelligent.
Going to go with like sexually fluid.
This is a feminist podcast.
For those of you who aren't British, half of everything that British people say is sarcastic.
That was sarcasm.
Because the fact that just men find they find what they find attractive and stay kind of really within that line and actually find things unattractive that aren't. Mm.
Like how you can be really gay to
obsessive love.
Or really, really straight. I don't think women can be like super straight in the same way.
I just don't think we're as repulsed by the idea of being together because socially we've been conditioned to be together a lot more. Yeah. Be around each other.
But here's the thing, is that in three of the books that we've read now, it's all been confirming this experiment where it's like you said, men are very specific in their sexual attraction and are kind of repulsed by anything that is different to what their orientation is. Women, much more fluid. And I know I'm reading science behind it, but there's part of me that's still like holding back believing it because I'm like, but is this just the patriarchy saying, hey, look, the science, girls make out with girls, we want to fetishize lesbianism. Like, that's just playing in my head. I'm like, but isn't, I don't know.
Yeah.
And like men being like, oh no, like I'm just into women, or like I'm just into dudes, like it just being like, no. And then women being like, oh, I'll have a bit of this, I'll have a bit of this. I don't
more of a tap-ass effect.
I don't know. I'm so confused in my brain because I'm reading all this science about it and I'm like, no, but is this them tricking us into being like sexually fluid people and then men enjoying observing so that.
Who knows?
I'm really sorry. I'm like,
we need more human conspiracy studies on sex.
Yeah. Like Hannah Witten conspiracy 101.
More human studies on sex, please. All the sex science people.
Yeah.
That's what we need so we understand, and we need women doing them as
because
well.
Because it's definitely more socially acceptable, like culturally, for women to be more experimental in their sexuality than it is for men.
Yeah. But then that's why that men have more deviances because
they've got nowhere else to like
in fucking general, and do you know what I mean? Well, maybe we because we I don't know.
Also, I know where you're going.
Can you tell me what? Because I don't know if I skipped the part about transgender stuff.
There was some transgender stuff.
Maybe I skipped it.
By accident. Okay. I've got one more thing to mention about this topic, and then can we talk about the transgender stuff?
Yeah, because it's we're talking about like women and men a lot.
Okay, so the other thing in this was that, I can't remember the exact phrase that they used, but part of women not necessarily mentally getting turned on, but physiologically getting turned on by, like, almost anything. Someone said it was, like, a protection thing.
Wrote that down.
So you don't get injured.
Yeah,
Female defence mechanism.
There you go.
237.
This, from your tone, I'm feeling like you're feeling the same way that I am about it.
That scared the shit out of you.
Yeah. That it's literally us just going...
See if I can do a
little
shout line.
Like, it's just us
please
getting
don't
wet.
Hurt me. Yeah.
So that if we get raped, it's not going to hurt as much. Like, I'm like, what?
And it can be... So it just says, a woman's genitals can be in stark disagreement with her desires. The erect penis, in contrast, is a direct window into a man's erect soul. Erotic soul.
That's what I said before, yeah. Erect soul. Wow. His soul is a wreck, am I right now?
Or, like, oh my god, I actually kind of love him as a writer and I'd like to read, like, short articles he writes because he writes stuff like, or even more to the point, it's a divining rod to his reservoir of specific desires. Jesse, you're hilarious.
I was chuckling at parts.
Yeah, but I think he's got a good tone.
Where does it say the thing about female defence mechanism?
So that's here. That's just in the paragraph four, but it's quite a long one, so I didn't want to read it out.
Is there just like 236 is the page number.
Oh yeah, so it's basically like scientists could also use some of these tests on women to find out whether they're paedophiles, but they wouldn't be as certain about it because women are a lot more suggestible because they're likely to get wet even when they're not aroused.
Yeah, it was mentioned in a chapter before the paedophile chapter there as well.
Also, this has come up in previous books.
Yeah. That we get wet at everything.
We didn't get that
anything
far.
That's sexually relevant.
It's not like we're going to Tesco Express and we're like, oh, Tesco Express.
Yeah. No, but it has to be sexually relevant. So that's why, like, watching monkeys have sex.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. But yeah, no, it's terrifying to me that's what some science says is the biological reason that our vagina lubricates itself.
Well, the quite cosmo style stereotypes about sex are that women will do it even if they don't feel like it, or they can feel pressured into it and do it and, you know, lay on their back and think of England. And men are quite impotent and are just like, do you know what I mean? So it's like, if we don't want to have sex, we still can.
Well, the
and
one
it's hard
thing
to tell without us saying whether we actually want. But when men don't want to have sex, they just go floppy and then.
The one thing that I've heard people say recently is. men have sex when they're horny and women have sex to get horny.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know, right?
This is one of our first sober banging book clubs and I feel like I need a gin.
I'm sorry, ladies, I just moved in and I got no
booze. But men, in the house. Men can get erect involuntarily though, can't they?
Yeah.
I asked someone about this the other day. And you can definitely get erect for like absolutely no mental like horniness at all.
Yeah.
So it can happen sometimes.
Yeah. So that bit was terrifying and I don't know how much I want to believe it.
And also it feels like all of these conclusions drawn from the studies on women are very they haven't been thought out particularly intensely. It's like they've gone, oh, here's the study that we did with men and women, first of all. And then they've kind of gone, we need a conclusion for the women's one. Probably could be this. And everyone's like, yeah, it probably could be that. And they leave it at that.
All right,
they don't. Bye. There's no multiple problem hypotheses. Solved. There's nothing, there's nothing nuanced about it. It's quite, straightforward. Oh, this would make logical sense.
Jessie, we loved your book. We'd also like if a woman wrote a very similar book because we think it would be quite different.
Yeah, I think
it would still. I think if they had the same brief, I think they'd come out with different books.
Yeah, and I do find different research. Like Jessie's voice is super, super strong in it. Maybe because it's the audiobook, but as a gay, I think you're white man. Yeah. I like how it's like I'm talking to him. Hey Jessie.
Hey Jessie. But,
you might hear.
As a gay man.
Is there a picture of him in the book?
Nah.
Oh, yeah, author photo.
Boring.
Oh.
I always love a good author photo.
Yeah, they all look like they were just told, in the publishing house to just stand by a wall. right. We need your photo.
A bit harassed.
Yeah.
And like Johnny Depp confessing about.
But
his
I
dogs.
Feel like. I feel like his voice is super, super, super strong, which is really nice to read.
Yeah.
But also, all the thoughts he has are very, very clear and they're very non-negotiable almost. And that feels to me very,
Did you find it preachy?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I've got a section that I definitely disagree with. Okay. Tell me if you you also disagree with it. It's the part where he says, he's talking about the way that, people think that you can guess whether somebody's gay or not, and it can be scientific, which is fine and interesting.
Yeah.
But then he talks about gender atypical traits in early childhood, which are so associated with homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, we may not like the fact that these old stereotypes have any basis in reality, but irrespective of that, they do.
Yeah.
And he's like, girls who are... I don't like...
Girls who are tomboys are lesbians, and
I don't...
Boys that play with dolls will turn out gay. Yeah. I don't like that either.
And I don't think if he's just doing it in a nuanced, this could be true, he's not saying it clearly enough.
Yeah.
And I'm also just a bit like, no, the point is that gender is performative and taught to us, and girls who like sport are rebelling against the norm. That doesn't mean they're homosexual.
Ooh, yeah. Said very well. I agree with that.
Well,
you can't really say it's rebelling against the norm because that would make it a choice and it's not.
Mm. I feel like we've gone very, very, philosophical and in-depth on this. I'm very keen.
Me too. Can we talk about transgender stuff?
Okay, I'm gonna... I didn't read this bit of the chapter, so...
Okay,
can you remind me? Talk? I don't know, I...
Okay, so... he basically, in the context of sexual deviancy, he kind of splits it up into different kinds of trans stuff. So he talks about drag queens a bit, but then it's kind of like, but that's... They're not dressing up as women and performing for sexual pleasure. Like, it's the joy of the performing, and it's
not necessarily
sexual. It's not a sexual gratification thing. So he kind of disregarded that as a fetish kind of thing. The other thing that he said was then there's transvestites, and I immediately recoiled because I didn't think that we use that word anymore. I didn't think that was a PC word.
What's alternative?
I thought transvestite was basically a non-PC version
of transgender.
I thought
that was an offensive way of saying transgender.
Well, in the book, he describes a transvestite as a straight, cis man who gets sexual pleasure from dressing up as a woman and, feeling women's clothing.
Yeah, I thought a transvestite was a man who gets pleasure from, straight
men. Can I quickly Google it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. Yeah, I was just like, whoa, okay. Men. And I was, totally on board with the fact that that is a fetish that some straight men would have. But I didn't realise that that was the name for it because I don't know, I just had like a visceral maybe reaction to that word.
Maybe it's been
like,
used as a derogatory term for transgender people to just be like, you're just getting turned on by being a woman.
That's where I had to Google it.
But then when he started...
I love what we live such privileged lives, but we're just like, probably not a gunshot. Yeah. Carry on.
But then when he actually talked about people who are transgender, and this was specifically more about...
It's pretty much exactly what you said.
Oh, is it?
A person, typically a man, who derives pleasure from dressing in clothes appropriate to the opposite sex.
Okay. Mm. So that's like a valid fetish or like sexual...
Now we know something more.
Okay. Okay. But like, please let us know how you feel about that word, because I still feel weirdly uncomfortable with that word.
Yeah, if you identify as transgender, how do you feel about the word transvestite?
Or if you're what is described as a transvestite.
I'm sure it's been used to insult and degrade transsexuals, but is it?
There we go, transsexual. That's another word that he then uses, and transsexual is meant to be, in this book, synonymous with transgender, and I'm pretty sure we're not supposed to use transsexual anymore.
Because sex and gender are very different things.
Yeah.
But then do you use the word transsexual for people who are physically transitioned?
Yeah,
and
maybe.
And transgender for people who...
Oh, see, we're so uneducated. Oh,
it's kind of like Muslim myths.
But this is
the best
time to start getting educated. So we will start getting educated about it. Now we're having all the questions.
I'm pretty sure I've only ever used transgender or trans to describe someone who whose gender identity isn't the same as like the sex they were assigned at birth.
That could just be because that's the norm in like our current... PC language at the moment is the word we're using, and we probably wouldn't question it because...
But then the other thing that he does is, off the back of the transvestite thing, he then, when talking about actual transgender people and specifically about male to female, he kind of says like, this is a thing about gender identity, gender dysphoria, or, like, all of that good stuff that I was like, yeah. And then he's like, but some also might find sexual pleasure in that, in the actual, like, dressing up as a woman. And I was like, I was thinking, like, well, obviously they find pleasure in it because it's, but not necessarily sexual, because they're, like, being able to express who they are.
It's confusing the idea of choice and dysphoria.
But, like, dressing the way that you want and expressing your... Yeah, expressing your gender the way that you want to express it and being able to do that, and especially coming from a place where you were like, couldn't previously do that, that's going to probably give
that
you
a
lot
of... That would arouse me.
That would probably give you a lot of pleasure. But then...
Freedom is sexy.
I know I'm horribly cis and privileged, but the thing that it made me think of, because I was like, but not all trans people are going to get sexually aroused by wearing the clothes of the gender that they are. Do you know what I mean? But then the way that I was trying to, like, think about it was, like, I feel sexually aroused by myself and, like, feel sexy when I'm wearing clothes that I like and I'm wearing things that I feel like a me, and I feel like I'm fully expressing myself and I feel sexy in. So maybe
and I feel the opposite of sexy when I don't dress to what I think is sexy, which to me, because I'm conventionally quite feminine, is baggy, masculine... clothing that doesn't cinch in at a waist or
doesn't make you feel all sexy.
Yeah, like Birkenstocks and socks, like, not my jam.
Also, what about the people who identify as transgender and also asexual?
Well, he was weird. I don't think his stuff on asexuality was good enough.
No,
I didn't even notice he said anything about asexuality.
He did, but then the other thing is that I think his stuff... I got very confused in his trans bit because... I just found it really hard to follow because there was stuff about like M to F and then F to M and then M to F heterosexual and homosexual and like all of this, and he kept on like coming to conclusions about different ones, and I just found it really hard to follow.
You don't think he organized
who he was talking about, and I was like, am I just horribly ignorant and not patient enough to try and understand people that are different to me, or is this badly written and explaining it badly? Yeah. So I was just like, about that thing.
This has made me realise I really need to read more books about trans experiences. And
Trumpet in 2 weeks' time. There's also one called Stone Butch Blues for anybody who's listening, which I've recommended before, but it's really great. And it's by Leslie Feinberg. And it's not as available as it should be. But you can find it on Amazon secondhand.
Okay.
But
the asexual stuff is... He, like, mentioned it, which is great. But he completely disregarded that there was any such thing as romantic attraction. But I guess it's a book about sexual deviances, so maybe he like wasn't going to go into that. But it could have at least had a mention, because he was basically like, asexual people aren't attracted to anyone. And I was like, no, but they could be romantically attracted to people. Yeah. And there's a spectrum of asexuality.
Yeah.
You know, from like not sexual at all to like hypersexual. And then there's all of that like in the middle.
When was this written?
I don't know.
I think quite recently.
I kept thinking about
that. I think it's 2013 or something.
Yeah, it seems recent, but not
2013.
As he references George Bush.
Yeah.
Maybe he just wrote this and it took a long time for him to get a publisher, and then that's why it's out of date. That's the problem with nonfiction. Yeah. It takes so long to hit the shelves that you're like, this isn't even relevant. 2013.
No, maybe not though, because I think, no, actually, it would have taken a long time to research, I reckon. Yeah. But he'd already had a book published. And he went to his publisher with the idea, it says in the intro. So, I think.
I have one more thing I want to bring up. What about you guys?
Yep, I'm good with that.
Yeah, I think we've been going.
It's a small point.
I think we've got 45.
I've kind of got a little line that is, for me, like, summarises what the book's about. So I'll say that.
What was yours?
It is 274, which is... science would tell you what's moral and what's not. By standing on your own 2 feet on the terra firma of reality instead of remaining in your eyeballs and swamped of dogma, you'll get a much lay of the land. Basically, it's like, science won't give you morals, but it's important to read about science so that you can make a proper moral judgment of your own.
Yeah.
So without the science, we can't make moral judgments.
Yeah.
Because you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, because making
And he's
moral
not trying to make a moral judgment. But he's like, here it's is some science to use for your moral judgment.
It's so hard to take the morals out of some of the stuff in there. But the...
Yeah, what were you going to...
So the thing is, when he started talking about Jermaine Greer...
Oh, I wanted to bring this up as well. I had no idea about some of the stuff he said.
Yeah, so she wrote some book about beautiful boys. And then...
And then tried to justify it and still made it sound super creepy. She tried to do this real, like, but damage control that made it worse.
And then there's all these, like, pictures, but, like, artistic pictures that they tried to, like, get into art galleries of, like, naked pubescent kids. And so I want to know is, how would you feel about an artistic gallery of... either paintings or photographs of, like, naked 12-year-olds.
Very uncomfortable. I thought about this while I was reading it. I really like art. I would find that very uncomfortable.
But it's art, Lucy.
No.
I'm playing devil's advocate.
If you're doing
Kanye West discussion about his bloody music video.
Oh, I've not seen it.
That's with Taylor Swift naked in it.
Oh, but aren't they all, like, not actually them, aren't they? Made out of stuff.
I still think... that I'm like, I understand you, Kanye West. I still think you're a dick. He's like, I'm going to explain the concept of art to you really slowly. And I'm like, fuck off, I know the concept of art. This is still wrong. Do you know what I mean? Like, as an artistic experiment, I thought I'd go and rape 10 people on my street. Still wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I felt deeply uncomfortable about taking photos of especially prepubescent girls.
Because they're technically paedophilic images if you're under 18.
Exactly. There are ways of taking photos of prepubescent girls that don't involve nudity or like involve like non-sexualized imagery, but it's very hard to not sexualize teen girl's body.
I think of like a world. Good healthy way. The thing that came to my head is Maddie, what's her face, the dancer in the Sia music videos.
Yes, that's
like
good.
She's what, 11, 12 years old, she's not hit puberty yet in her body, and she's wearing like a tight skin-coloured leotard, and you're watching her like a dance incredibly, and it's not made sexual at all, but you are basically seeing her like entire figure, and because it's skin-coloured, like it matches her skin tone. Yeah. Like from afar you'd think she was naked, but then she's not, and that I think is great.
Now you've mentioned,
do you know
that.
What I mean?
Yeah, and like that's not sensual at all, it's emotional, it's like rowdy. Yeah.
Have you seen those music videos, Lena?
Oh, what?
Oh, okay, that's what we're doing when we finish this.
I also think there's a danger of being like, we should cover up all bodies until they're 18 because bodies are shameful. Don't show your body until you're 18.
Well, it's not that. It's like, bodies can be naked until you hit puberty. Like, children's bodies, fine. Like, actual babies can be naked, whatever.
Oh, because 12 is on the cusp of...
And then as soon as you're, like, about to hit puberty... It's like, cover it up, cover it up, cover it up. And then as soon as you're, like, allowed to be sexual, it's like, get it out, get it out.
So confusing.
It's weird. Yeah. For me, it's about the eye of the photographer that comes up with taking photos of prepubescent or just pubescent girls, because it was specifically girls was the...
I thought it was boys.
Boys was the Greer book. Girls was the exhibition. And right. I was like, for me, it's a middle-aged man taking photos of pubescent girls.
You're like, red flag, red
That's
flag,
my red,
red
flag.
Flag.
And like, the eye of the beholder maybe is almost as important as the eye of the photographer for me.
I think what he said was interesting about this window between hitting puberty and being pubescent rather than prepubescent and technically being able to consent under law. Because he was like, a female teacher...
Oh God, you have not talked about age.
Yeah, a female teacher who has sex with a high school boy who is
like
hairy
16.
As fuck and has gone through all of this isn't paedophilia. It's probably still illegal.
It's hebephilia. That's what they
okay,
call it.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite interesting that it was like... There is this
hebephilia.
There's this gap where we can't legally consent to losing our own virginity
yeah.
for some fucking reason. But it is illegal. I don't know. There's that anyway. There's a gap where you haven't hit puberty because basically I don't blame the law because the law can't predict when you hit puberty. It's not a date.
Yeah.
It's not like.
Can you,
know you
imagine
mean?
1st of January of every year group and it's like you have now hit puberty?
Well, it'd be like,
bam,
it would be like some ancient civilizations that were like as soon as you turn 13, then you're a that's it.
I do think we need more nuance.
But it's usually like the start
though.
Of your period.
Oh yeah.
Because then it's like oh you're fertile now. So
maybe that's.
No, because I started my period
probably
when I was 11.
Mentally vulnerable.
Like, no thank you.
Yeah.
I was not ready.
No, and I knew people who had consent, well, they had sex age 13 and their period had started and that's still, I don't think a 13-year-old can consent to sex.
Well, in some countries that's the
Yeah, but legal law age is consent. Weird. Law is weird.
The law is weird.
Do you think there are 13-year-olds listening?
One of my friends lost her virginity when she was 13.
Yeah, it was a handful in my school, but lots
of
people
listening
did.
Now.
Oh, 13-year-olds listening now. Probably some.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you? Hello?
Hello?
Hi,
it's
sorry.
Me. I was sorry wondering.
I think most of our listeners are probably like 18 to 25.
I
so,
keep being
yeah.
scared at how young my audience is. Some of them are like, I'm just about to start high school. And I'm like, oh God, you are 13. Go
no,
14.
That's like high school.
High school.
American high school?
Yeah, American
okay,
high school.
I was going to say like.
If I had a daughter though, and she was like very young, I'd want to watch your channel. I think that'd be a good thing.
Thanks.
I'm not worried about that at
Everyone
all.
Everyone
would
watch
should.
All of our channels,
I'd be worried
actually.
If they'd watch my channel.
I say certain bits. I feel like this
it's
has
one
produced,
of the better discussions.
Yeah,
it's
produced one
Maybe
of the best
we should be sober.
Maybe we should be sober.
Maybe it's partly because of the book and partly because...
Yeah, I think it's a good comment on the book. Mm. I think book is, if not our favourite books, a good book overall. And
mm-hmm. Great for a book club.
Yes.
I think I'd be lonely to read alone and quite frustrating. But as I knew I was getting to talk about it after, I was
For
like,
sure.
Great.
Yeah.
As always, let us know what you think. Use the hashtag banging blah, 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 blah.
Blame and blip, blip.
Use the hashtag banging book club on Twitter if you're making like any blogs or video responses and we can check them out and add videos to the playlist. Next month.
We are reading A Little Gay History.
Yeah.
Wait, am I right?
Yeah, that
good,
is correct.
Very good.
Can't remember who that's by, but guys,
pictures.
I'm really sorry that it's another non-fiction, but it's short and it's got photos and pictures in it. It's
yeah.
gonna be great.
I'm very excited.
And I'm more excited about less science and more history. I think we've been reading a lot of science.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of history, shockingly.
I've also already read this book, so I'm very excited.
Yeah. We have a video on my channel, which is Lucy Moon's channel, about the book. So go and have a look. It's like a kind of summary. And if you want to make a video response, you can upload one and...
Hannah will add it to the playlist because she's a...
Make sure you tag it with Banging Book Club, hashtag Banging Book Club on Twitter if you send it to her.
Also, if you hadn't noticed, we're on iTunes now.
Yeah!
Oh my God. And what were
so
we like?
So rate us, I guess. That's what people do when they're
yeah,
on
and listen to us because we were like 146th or something in the like
in the,
rankings.
In the UK
Very exciting.
iTunes charts.
I want to be famous on iTunes.
On iTunes podcasting.
Thanks so much for listening. We've had a really interesting discussion, haven't we, about this one?
My mind is expanded.
I love it.
And my skull can't keep up.
I'm really sorry if the audio peaks all the way through this.
I know.
I think we got quite, what's the word, heartfelt.
It was good. Good chat.
Yeah.
Don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
Love us.
Okay,
subscribe.
See you next month.
Bye.
Bye. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.